Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here as we cover a lot of different things around the Umpqua Valley in Washington, D.C. 4th District Congresswoman Val Hoyle. It's been a busy week. Congresswoman, thanks for being on.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So yesterday, and we had this interesting timing because we had this scheduled for a ways out, but yesterday was the vote on secure rural schools. I know you testified on that yesterday. Talk about what that was like, finally getting it through in the House.
You know, this was so very important for our rural counties, and quite frankly, it's delivering on the promises made. I mean, when the timber industry crashed after, you know, the spotted owl was listed as an endangered species, you know, we have just in my district alone, 3 million acres that pay no kind of tax because they're federal forest land. And the fact is, secure rural schools is supposed to be in lieu of that. And we, you know, again, passing this was a bipartisan effort. Both Representative Cliff Benson and I spoke in favor of this. This passed the Senate, and we got a little concerned that maybe there were going to be some hiccups in the House, but I think it passed with only 3 no votes, with vast support in a bipartisan way. A lot of people worked really hard, and again, I just want to commend every one of my colleagues. Certainly Senators Merkley, Senators Wyden, and Representative Benz deserves a lot of credit, because this was critical, and we did not want to go home for Christmas without bringing the sorely needed dollars to our counties.
And added to the fact that this isn't reauthorizing something that's still going, it's reauthorizing something that's kind of been on pause for around a couple years.
For a couple of years, yeah, and we have felt that. Certainly in Douglas County, we've seen, whether it's the amount of deputy sheriffs, the money going to schools, the money that counties can use to just run basic services. So fundamentally, you know, Douglas County received over $13.5 million of those SRS funds through this program. So it's going to make a big difference for our community.
And I know the county officials I talked to ahead of this vote a ways back were, you know, really concerned with whether or not it was going to get through this time.
Yeah, we were. And when, you know, the vote was supposed to go through on suspension, so basically a voice vote, and Speaker Johnson wanted to have a recorded vote. And I called right away and said, what is happening? And I said, you know, speaking with my colleagues, speaking with Representative Benz and Representative LaMalfa, just from south of us in California, they assured us that they felt the votes were there. And the votes certainly were there. This is a bipartisan effort, and there's a lot of support. Again, there were 3 no votes, but, you know, out of 400 and, you know, 20-some-odd people, that's a pretty almost unanimous decision.
And this goes back to legislation originally co-authored by Senator Wyden back in 2000. So we've had over a generation of time, 25 years, dealing with this issue.
We have. And, you know, the bottom line is what secure rural school funds absolutely make a difference, and the federal government that has federal lands in our rural counties should be paying something to our local municipalities. But we have to figure out a different way. We can make our forests work for us. We can put people to work in our communities so that we're not relying on federal welfare, but rather, you know, bringing money into our communities by putting people to work. I'm working on bipartisan tribal co-management bills, ensuring that we'll have provisions that any timber sales, that those receipts will be split with the counties and local tribes, because as we know in the Republican budget bill, H.R. 1, it eliminated the ability for timber receipts to come straight to the county. So it goes to the Treasury, and then we have to wait for the federal government to take its cut to send it back to us. That makes no sense. So we're looking forward to actually managing our forests, making them work for us, and allowing us to bring money back into our counties so that we can do things like economic development and get people to work.
Well, I know there was a lot of concern, really, in some ways, from both sides of the aisle when the bill went through and diverted in the future money to the federal level and not having some of that come to the counties.
Right, and I had an amendment that I put in. It was voted down by Republicans in the Rules Committee. They would not consider it. I'm hoping, and I've certainly talked to Representative Benz, that we can pass a standbill or put a bill into something else so that we can reinstate the policy. Look, all we're asking is that federal lands that rely on county services and county support, that they pay in to provide those services. This is plain and simple. Those timber receipts should go to the counties, and that bill, because of a political maneuver that made it so that H.R. 1 would only need 51 votes in the Senate, what they did was they took out the receipts provision. So it really was a political game, so they wouldn't have to negotiate with Democrats. And now we're going to have to figure out how to get it back.
And do we have any timeline for the president to sign this?
We don't, but I know that, the Senate, the House, and people in the White House are very supportive. So I anticipate that this will happen soon. And I can't think of a better Christmas present for our counties and all the people that live in them.
So let's cover a few other things as well. You put out something in just the past couple of days regarding potential funding for Roseburg State Veterans Home. But even kind of going deeper than that, talking about expanding the State Veterans Home Construction Program, can you address that?
Well, first of all, in 2011, in the legislature, Republicans and Democrats, Tim Freeman was a representative then, Cliff Benz, myself, we voted on putting our state money match to build this veterans home. We've been able to get it prioritized with the VA, and now, because there's limited funds that are going to these projects, we need to make sure that, again, the federal government delivers on their promise to our veterans to that they can have benefits that they earned. These are not handouts. We have a lot of veterans that are in Douglas County, that are in Roseburg, and building this veterans home is the right thing to do. They've been pushing for this for almost 15 years, and the application has been consistently overlooked, and the cost of the project continues to go up. Veterans that aren't getting the services that they earned by putting their lives on and fighting for our country. So,
and we're having a little bit of phone issues there. If you're able to adjust where your phone is pointing a little bit, that would probably help us out. Let's see if this is better.
Yes, submitted an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act. That's the big funding bill for the Pentagon to increase funding for this program for Veterans Home Construction Grant Program, because there's $1 billion shortfall, and that was rejected. But I've called on my colleagues at the Veterans Affairs Committee to work on this, and I know that Representative Benz is also very supportive on making this a priority, and he's talked to the administration about it.
And it seems like, from what I understand, the amount of funding the various projects were asking for just was way off the chart above the amount of money that was budgeted for new construction or renovations or things like that in state veterans' homes.
That's exactly right. So what they have been doing is putting the money towards renovations of existing homes. And you can have a great program, but no money, no mission. So we need to make sure that we are funding the programs that we put together to support our veterans who are aging and deserve and have earned these services. So I know there's bipartisan support for, you know, prioritizing this. Budgets are all about priorities. So what we're saying is that we want our federal government to prioritize taking care of our veterans as they age. And I don't think that should be a partisan issue.
Are you concerned, though, with the current administration wanting to pull back budgets on a lot of levels, that that's going to be a bit of a roadblock?
I am concerned, and, you know, that means that we just have to fight harder and work in a bipartisan way to get it done. I mean, there are some things that are worth fighting for, and I think taking care of our veterans as they age, given what they put on the line for our country, I mean, they put their lives on the line to protect and serve our country, and they are worth fighting for in making their needs a priority. So, again, I know we have bipartisan support. I am working with Representative Bentz on this, and we've been waiting just too darn long. And, again, it's just getting more expensive. Had we done it 6 years ago, A, it would be working right now, and we'd have veterans that would be able to stay there, and it would have cost much less. So we can't delay any longer, so we're just going to keep working to make sure that our veterans are taken care of and this program is funded.
Well, and as well, the state piece of the funding is set to expire in a couple of years, which would require additional law action from lawmakers in Salem as well, adding another wrinkle to all of this because of the combined federal and state funds that are needed.
That's right. So, again, this isn't something that we're going to give up on, and I'm going to continue, you know, I bring it up all the time. Because the way you get something done is you just work at being persistent and making the case. And I don't think that there's a clearer case for a budget prioritization, than this one right here.
A lot of concern right now, turning the curve a little bit, is the Obamacare funding package, all of that expiring at the end of the year, and both sides trying to figure out what to do about that. Where do you think this is going to go with not that many days left in the calendar year?
I don't know any other way to describe it than a hot mess. I mean, I have talked to, so you have people that are on the Oregon Health Plan, right? And the requirements for eligibility are difficult and onerous. And so that is going to, by the nature of how it works, knock people off who may not have the faculties to be able to fill out. They might get something wrong on the paperwork, and then they're knocked off, and they're not going to be able to have access to health care. I've spoken with all the rural hospitals in my district, and they are deeply, deeply concerned about what's going to happen as these subsidies go away. I have talked to business people, right, small business people, who have said that their premiums have gone up by a couple of thousand dollars. I talked to some parents that of children, children went to school with, their parents have a small business in Eugene. They said they're in their mid-50s. They said this is the first time that in our lives that we're going to go without insurance because we can't afford the increase in premium. And these are for basic plans with high deductibles. So, you know, I'm really concerned that on the ground we're going to see our healthcare delivery system implode. I have been speaking with the governor and people at the Oregon Health Authority about how are we going to address the decrease in funds that are happening, and how are we going to address that we are going to have more uninsured people that will end up in our hospitals that will not be able to pay, and, you know, how do we deliver health care in our rural and frontier areas? I am very concerned in just 21 days the enhanced premium tax credits will expire, and over 50,000 people in our communities, right, will see their premiums spike. And I'm hearing from them every single day. I'm really frustrated. I think that there's a way. We have to fix this program. And we've gotten nothing from my Republican colleagues other than to say, no, we will not extend these premiums while we work on something, because we're just going to hit a cliff. And I'm really concerned specifically for our rural hospitals. So I'm frustrated, and we'll continue to work to see what we can do. But this is going to be devastating.
And we've also seen the announcement of a couple of more rural Oregon hospitals set to close in the near future, just in the last week or so. And it seems like that's a different definite concern as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, when you think about it, whether it's, you know, if we look at the Bay Area hospital that, you know, really is on the bubble of being downgraded from the level of hospital that it is, right? If we have that downgraded hospital, like where are women going to have babies, right? What happens if you have to have a stroke? Are you going to have to be flown to Eugene or to go up to Portland? The bottom line is this increases healthcare costs. And how can we have economic development? What business is going to want to come to a region that doesn't have a hospital? So, you know, 11 of our 33 rural or frontier hospitals are on the verge of closing or downgrading their level of treatment, right? The tier of treatment that they're able to provide. And we should all be concerned about that. So I'm frustrated that we've just, you know, the majority, Republican majority and Mike Johnson have said, no, we're not going to do anything, and we're not going to offer a solution. We're going to wait. We're just going to let the people fall off the cliff, and then we'll come up with something. But they've been saying they're going to come up with something since the Affordable Care Act came into effect, and we have nothing. You know, you can't pay your medical bills with an idea or a dream or a promise. We need actual policies right now, and I will work with anyone, Democrat or Republican, to get something done. But this is unfair, and I think I fear this will have devastating consequences.
Just a few minutes left. Congresswoman Val Hoyle, live from Washington, D.C. As you look towards the end of the year, what are some of the other things that you're working on?
So the things that I'm working on, I'm going to have my 21st and final town hall of 2025, which will be by phone this Monday at 5:30. The link to sign up is on my website, and folks will need to RSVP by 10 a.m. that morning to be on the call. And I'll share updates about what's been going on in Congress and answer questions directly from the community. I've done in-person and telephone town halls. What I have found with such a large district and, you know, people having to drive a long way to town halls, having telephone town halls allows for more participation. And then we're doing the end of the year totals, and I'm proud to share I have an amazing district staff that works with constituents on problems with the VA, IRS, with FEMA, the Small Business Administration, Homeland Security or ICE, or any federal agency. And we've gotten over $5.4 million returned to constituents. This is money that people were owed, either because the IRS was holding on to money that they should have gotten back, or because they didn't get benefits because their Social Security benefits were caught up in a paperwork loop. We can help people with that. And look, it doesn't matter where you're from. In my district, if you call my office, we will help you. We want to make sure that people get the money that they deserve. And we've been really successful this year, and I'm so proud of my team.
You know, it's interesting because that kind of work, whichever side of the aisle is doing it, is not what gets the headlines like the other issues we've been talking about. But when people do run into those situations where something just didn't go right and they are not sure where to go or not getting help they need, being able to key in with a staff person who can direct them or help them or kind of advocate for them seems to make a big difference.
It does. And I think what people need to know, I think I've heard from some people, well, you know, I have this issue, but I didn't want to call because I didn't vote for you. My official staff that do constituent work do not check to see whether someone's a Republican or a Democrat or whether they voted or they didn't vote. The bottom line is we are here to help constituents, and people should feel free to call. We have an exceptionally qualified team of people, and they really love the work that they do. But they're the people that quietly go about getting things done. And you're right, that isn't what gets the headlines. But for me, it is the most satisfying part of this job.
What are you looking at in terms of proposing legislation going into next year, or maybe some of your priorities for 2026?
So for 2026, we're going to be working. I am the ranking member on the Water, Wildlife, and Fisheries subcommittee. And so we're going to be working on, a bipartisan tribal co-management program to work with our local tribes to come in and help manage some of our forest land and other natural resources, make sure that we keep our public lands open to the public. The last thing we want to do, especially where we've seen so many of our federal workforce get laid off or fired or, be made redundant, to make sure that we can manage those lands so that they don't, A, burn, or B, get sold off to private interests. I feel very strongly that our public lands are our lands, are the people's lands, and we want to make sure we manage them properly. And again, for any timber that is cut, that those receipts go to our counties and, make sure that they're paying for our infrastructure and upkeep.
What is maybe the most tough part of being a member of Congress?
I think right now is, day to day, I have conversations with colleagues across the political spectrum. But there is frustration. I have heard from some of my Republican colleagues as well that the White House would like to treat Congress as if we're supposed to just rubber stamp what they want. And our constitutional duty as a separate and equal branch of government is to make sure that we use the power of the purse, that we're weighing in on tariffs, that the Senate is advising deciding, being a deciding vote on who gets appointed, on the courts or in positions in the administration. And there is a lot of frustration with Speaker Mike Johnson. I think you've seen a number of Republican women speaking out about it, that, he is pushing that we be a rubber stamp for the president. Well, whether it's a Democrat in power or a Republican in power, as Congress, we need to be a check and a balance to the executive branch, for the judicial branch. And that's how we, the people, can have the most power and the strongest voice. So that's my biggest frustration, and I'm hoping that something will shift in 2026. So that we can take that power back and actually do our job.
All right, 4th District Congresswoman Val Hoyle out of time today. KQEN News Time, 1258.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.